Good evening, everyone. You're listening to KABF 88.3, and this is Speak Up Arkansas. This is a place to talk about the ways that public policy affects everyday lives of folks right here in Arkansas, and how we can hold our elected officials and policymakers accountable for the decisions they make on our behalf. Exercising our right to vote is incredibly important, but it's not the only way that regular folks like you and me can make our voices heard. On this show, we'll talk about not only the policies that are being considered, but the ways in which we can ensure that our elected officials understand what our priorities are. So we hope you listen, learn, and then go one step further and act. That's why it's called Speak Up Arkansas, folks. I'm Carrie Cernell with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. We work to ensure that children in our state have the resources and opportunities to lead healthy, productive lives and to reach their full potential. We research and analyze public policy. We organize coalitions to drive change, and we serve as a voice for children at the state capitol and in Washington, D.C. This evening, we're going to look at a few of the policy issues currently being talked about on the federal level that will have repercussions for kids and families and many of you listening right here in Arkansas. There is a whole lot of noise coming out of our nation's capital these days, so we're going to take some time to focus on the things that are most likely to have a direct impact on you and your family. And as always, we'll take your questions. Okay, so with me in the studio are a few of my colleagues from Arkansas Advocates. We have Rich Huddleston, who is the Executive Director at Advocates.
Good afternoon.
With us is Marquita Little, who is our Health Policy Director.
Hi.
And the intrepid Jenny Blankenship, our Education Policy Director.
Intrepid, huh?
You object to being characterized as intrepid?
I have no problem whatsoever, thanks.
Okay, well, good. Well, intrepid folks all in the studio tonight. We want you to call in and be a part of the conversation. So you can call with your questions for us. The number here is 501-433-0088, or you can send an email to speakupar@gmail.com. Okay, let's get to it. So first up, Rich, recently the Trump budget was released. President Trump released his budget priorities, and it has quite a few people talking about some of the cuts that are being made and some other features of those. So what can you tell us about that?
Sure. Pretty much in one word, his proposed budget is devastating. It should really lay to rest any notion that he's looking out for the millions of Americans that the economy has left behind. He's proposing steep cuts in basic health, nutrition, and other important assistance programs for tens of millions of struggling Americans, while at the same time he's calling for huge tax cuts for our wealthiest citizens and our most profitable corporations. I think most experts agree that poverty and income inequality would grow significantly worse, while deficits would almost assuredly rise. One expert has called the president's proposed budget has a radical Robin Hood in reverse plan, where he takes from the poor and middle class and gives to the rich. So it's Robin Hood in reverse. And it's been called the most devastating budget for low and middle income families that any modern day president has proposed. Just to throw out some numbers, I can't even believe I'm throwing out some of these numbers because they are just in some ways unthinkable. Over the next 10 years, his budget proposes $4.3 trillion, not million, not billions, but $4.3 trillion. In non-defense cuts, and of that $4.3 trillion, about $2.5 trillion would come from low and moderate income programs. So huge, devastating cuts for low and middle income families. One of our folks is going to talk about healthcare in a second, but $610 billion. Of his proposed cuts would come from healthcare and Medicaid. That $610 billion is on top of the $1.3 trillion in cuts that are already contained under the House healthcare bill that's been passed by the House and is now in the Senate. And but it goes deeper than that. In addition to cuts to Medicaid, it proposes major cuts to other basic assistance programs. So, for example, it would include $275 billion in cuts to entitlement programs over the next 10 years, such as almost $200 billion in cuts to SNAP, which is our nation's food stamp program. It used to be called food stamps, important nutrition assistance for low-income families. Would cut funding there by almost $200 billion over the next 10 years, about a 25% cut. Basically by cutting eligibility for millions of households out there who would almost assuredly not be able to meet their nutritional needs, and many of whom would go hungry without that basic assistance being available. It also pushes 25% of the cost for SNAP back to the states. It also gives states new flexibility, unfortunately, in terms of cutting SNAP. And so states did not want to make up that 25% cut, and most state budgets would not be able to do that. States would be in a position where they would have to cut SNAP benefits even more. Also includes $100 billion in disability programs for our seniors, for people with disabilities. Pretty much would be a definite sign that the president has broken his promise to protect Social Security, because disability programs are an important part of the Social Security umbrella of programs. Would also cut funding for the TANF program, which is the nation's welfare program, which provides short-term income assistance, work programs, and other crucial supports for poor families with children. Would also eliminate the Social Security Block Grant program, which provides funding for services such as adult daycare programs for seniors and people with disability, child care, and help for children who are at risk of abuse and neglect. But it goes even worse than that. In addition to those huge cuts in health care and basic assistance programs, you would have unprecedented budget cuts. What are known as non-defense discretionary programs, which includes funding for things like education, scientific research, public health, housing assistance, and basic governmental operations. You're talking cuts there that would total about $1.6 trillion over the next decade, and would take non-defense discretionary spending down to its lowest level as a percent of the economy in six decades. Compared to today, non-defense discretionary spending would see a 41% cut in real terms over the next decade. So what does that mean for ordinary Arkansans, that huge cut? Well, we would have job training programs cut by 40%, despite the need for so many workers who need to upgrade their skills to succeed in today's economy. It would eliminate housing vouchers for millions of low-income households, denying them help to pay their rent and avoid homelessness. It would end the low-income energy assistance program, which helps poor Arkansas households pay high heating bills. It would also eliminate legal services for the poor. It would dramatically cut things like medical and scientific research, environmental protection efforts. We're talking cuts of the likes of which this country has never seen. Again, a radical Robin Hood in reverse. So cutting programs that so many Arkansas families depend on, not just to get by, but to hopefully succeed in this new economy that's developed since the recession ended. Where's all that money going to go? Well, the other side of the equation are tax cuts for the rich in our most profitable corporations. Trump's plan would shrink federal revenues by almost $6 trillion over 10 years. The top 1%, the richest folks in this country, would receive annual tax cuts averaging more than $250,000 apiece. And that's on top of the tax cuts that's also in the House's health care plan, because they get tax cuts there as well. low and middle income families would get virtually nothing under the president's tax cut proposal. At least 17 million working families and individuals would be excluded from any tax cut. Others would get get minimal benefits. Now what is the president proposing in terms of tax cuts? Well, a big chunk of that is going to be cutting corporate income taxes. And so today, the top rate for corporations is 35%. He's talking about cutting that down to 15%. That's going to cost $2 trillion over 10 years. And many of the benefits of corporate income tax cuts actually flow to the rich who own corporations. And would also eliminate the state tax, and which quite frankly, the only people who pay estate taxes today are the wealthiest 0.2% of estates, are the only ones who ever have to pay estates today. So I think by any standard, you're talking about a devastating budget, devastating tax cuts, and it would be the country's low and middle income families who would shoulder the burden. So that we can pass benefits on to our wealthiest individuals and our most profitable corporations. So, Carrie, in a nutshell, that's kind of it. But I'm happy to, talk more. But I can't even believe that I'm throwing out numbers those big in the trillions of dollars, even over 10 years. It's just an unfathomable budget that President Trump has proposed, and I think it lays to rest any notion that there's a compact between the federal government and the states, and the federal government struggling citizens who can barely get by. Low and middle income families really are going to be on their own if this budget were to pass. And I will say, fortunately, it is just a proposed budget, so Congress is going to have to make some key decisions over the next 6 to 8 months. Congress does not have to pass this budget. Some folks have called the president's proposed budget dead on arrival, but it's not. For one basic reason is that his proposed budget is really going to lay the baseline for negotiations. And so so even if Congress doesn't adopt all of the president's proposed budget cuts, quite frankly, adopting just a quarter of the president's proposed budget cuts would be devastating to families and to the nation's economy. And so his proposed budget right now is kind of the baseline that negotiations are starting from in terms of the budget. But I think it even goes to show that today more than ever, we have to engage our federal congressional delegation. I know for a lot of folks, it's tough enough just trying to engage your state legislators, who live closer to you locally. I mean, the notion of trying to engage people in Congress and trying to engage our U.S. senators is a foreign concept for many folks. But I'll say this, if we don't do that over the next 6 months, you could be talking about budget cuts and tax cuts for the rich. That could devastate the country for the rest of us.
So not a lot to like in that budget.
No.
To say the very least.
No.
You talked a little bit about the importance of engaging our federal legislators, our senators and representatives. And, of course, very recently, we saw a lot of that going on with respect to health care, the American Health Care Act, which first was kind of thwarted and then eventually passed the House of Representatives. Marquita, talk to us a little bit about sort of the latest developments around the federal effort to reform health care.
Sure. So I think maybe a couple months ago I was here and we were talking about celebrating how the first version of the bill kind of didn't. We were expecting it to come up for vote, and it didn't. But we said, there's more to come. Let's all be ready because we don't know what to expect in the future. So that's where we are today in terms of the news that Carrie just shared, and that House bill actually did pass at the federal level. So this happened in May, actually. There were a few changes to the bill, and so I'll talk briefly about that. But the bill still puts the health care of millions of Americans, tens of thousands of Arkansans, at risk. So kind of here's the latest. Here's where we are. Again, not much has changed. At a minimum, we know that the proposed changes to the healthcare system in our country, it would be a big blow to the Medicaid program. You know, and I hate to throw out a bunch of big numbers and say and use words like devastating, but that's really true. If we look at the massive amount of cuts that we would see over the next decade to our Medicaid program. Although initial estimates said 24 million people would potentially end up uninsured in the decade, there's some slight improvement. That's gone down to 23 million.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's kind of relative in terms of how you define improvement. So, again, so, you know, not to joke about what's a serious matter, but still millions of people would lose insurance under this proposed plan. I think one of the most concerning aspects of this plan, you know, is the fact that it goes well beyond sort of the campaign promise of many lawmakers to repeal Obamacare, and it starts to cut funding to the Medicaid program. So that's where we start looking at putting our most vulnerable folks at risk. That's kids, that's people with disabilities, and that's pregnant women who would suffer because of these changes to the program. You know, one of the other things that folks have probably heard a lot about in the news were the provisions or proposals, the proposal that would have a huge impact on people with pre-existing conditions. So first, just one thing to kind of clear up in terms of clarifying what the actual impact is. So there's a lot of talk about being able to deny people coverage who have a pre-existing condition. Under the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, you can't do that. And so a lot of folks have been talking about now you'd be able to do that if this version of this federal bill passes. That's not quite the case. So you still wouldn't be able to outright deny people with pre-existing conditions coverage. But what it does is roll back a bunch of consumer protections that were in place. And so one of those is actually turning back one of the protections that essentially says you can't charge people these exorbitant amounts who have a pre-existing condition. So while you still can't straight out deny and not cover them, you could certainly totally price people out of coverage. And so the end result is that people with pre-existing conditions still end up without coverage options because they're no longer affordable. You know, and so I think just to kind of also bring it to the level of what it would mean, you know, in Arkansas, there's been a lot of reports here recently, actually, that have focused on the huge impact that these cuts and changes to the healthcare system could potentially have on rural communities. So I'll just highlight one example because we do so much work around ensuring that kids have access to coverage and kids have access to care. In Arkansas, if you look at our rural communities and our small counties in Arkansas, 61% of kids are enrolled and rely on the Medicaid program. So we know that overall, these types of changes certainly would affect Arkansas in a major way. We expanded coverage to a bunch of low-income adults. 300,000 adults could potentially lose coverage. But the impact on kids is really an important point to highlight because that has not been a lot of the discussion, that this will definitely have a very direct impact on those kids that we thought, no matter what, kids would be safe and protected.
Well, that's... Hi, okay, I couldn't hear myself. I'm just breaking it in behind the board here. So, Marquita, you talked a little bit about sort of the devastating impact on kids, particularly in rural areas mm-hmm. of the state. What does this mean in terms of kind of the overall, you know, we hear a lot about one of the wonderful benefits of the Medicaid expansion was to hospitals and to rural communities.
Yeah. Yeah, so a little bit more on the expansion. So a lot of y'all might know our expansion program by a number of different terms. Some people call it the private option. It's now Arkansas Works, because we have made some changes to the program. But in a nutshell, again, 300,000 folks, many of whom had no affordable coverage options, are now covered by this program. And so the impact that we've seen, in addition to people actually having coverage, is that our rural hospitals, a lot of our hospitals, but especially our rural hospitals, have been saved, because a lot of hospitals prior to us expanding coverage, a lot of hospitals really kind of bear the burden of people coming in and relying on the ER who don't have coverage. I mean, they see those folks regardless. I mean, then those hospitals are left with the bills that people can't afford to pay. So that's one of the huge improvements we saw when we expanded coverage. People were getting care, but hospitals have been able to keep their doors open. If you compare Arkansas to a number of other states, especially southern states, because southern states basically didn't really expand, certainly that's changed just slightly. Louisiana's governor has announced, as soon as he took office, actually, that he was going to pursue expansion. But if you compare us even to, you know, some of our neighbors, you'll see that they definitely, their hospital system has suffered pretty significantly, because hospitals can't continue to operate if people are coming in without insurance. And you also think about the role of those hospitals in that they provide jobs for a lot of people. So, you know, we're talking about ending jobs. We're talking about people having even less access to care. And we're talking about healthcare professionals in other capacities, nurses, physicians, maybe having to take cuts in their rates. You know, and so I think the overarching message here is, you know, in the same way that the entire community benefits when its people have coverage and care, the entire community would suffer as we make these cuts, you know. And I didn't even talk about some of the things Rich mentioned a moment ago. These are just cuts in the healthcare bill alone that's being considered. There are additional proposed cuts that would potentially happen in the federal budget. And I'll kind of pause for a second, but, you know, I can definitely give you the latest, too, in terms of where that bill is, if you want to talk about that a bit.
Great. All right. Well, you know, this definitely is an example of kind of the domino effect of when you cut in one place in the budget, or you talk about reforms in one place, it definitely ricochets into other areas. So, you know, that's an important thing to consider.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a short break here, but I wanted to invite you all, if you have questions, to give us a call. We are at 501-433-0000. And remember, you can email your questions in as well to speakupar@gmail.com. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back.
Thank you.
Okay, we are back, beset with all kinds of CD issues, but nonetheless, we persevere. So you can call again with questions at 501-433-0088. Email us at speakupar@gmail.com. Jenny Blankenship, tell us a little bit about federal education policy, kind of where that stands now, and what changes we are looking at.
Sure. I think the most immediate thing that Arkansans need to be paying attention to is implementation of what's called the ESSA plan, which is the Every Student Succeeds Act. This is going to be the new federal, this is the new federal law that replaces what was previously known as the No Child Left Behind law. And it affects everything from how students will be tested, how often, how schools will be held accountable for academic results, and how teachers and school leaders will be evaluated and supported, among many other things. So this is a very big overarching piece of federal legislation that will affect all public schools in all states. And Arkansas Advocates did a report earlier this spring with the Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading after researching what are some of the opportunities that this new federal law presents to Arkansas, and how can we capitalize on it, because there's a lot of things that it does that we think are much more student focused and more flexible than the previous No Child Left Behind law. So you can find the full recommendations on our website at aradvocates.org. Just to summarize quickly some of the things that we hope to see in the final plan, and I'll talk a little bit about the timeline in a minute. We hope to see more of an emphasis on improving early childhood education and pre-K quality and access in the state's ESSA plan. And traditionally, there's been kind of a silo effect of early childhood education and K-12 education in Arkansas. We think the research shows that there are benefits to thinking of it as a more a continuum of early childhood education all the way up through grade 12, because we know that quality pre-K is the foundation for success in later grades, and you'll find a lot of resources about that on our website as well. Another thing is improving kindergarten through third grade reading instruction and policies. This includes using early warning systems to address reading difficulties like dyslexia, which affects so many of our students. Reporting assessment scores in school and state report cards for students in kindergarten through third grade, which is not something that's been done in the past. Under the No Child Left Behind law, it was essentially focused on grades 3 or 4 and up, all the way through high school. So we really hope that the state's plan will start incorporating a lot more of not just early learning, but the early grades, so that we can measure how students are doing and address problems before they kind of spiral out of control. We hope that they will expand high quality after school and summer programs that have proven to help improve grade level reading. Another thing you're going to hear a lot more about, and they have included this recommendation in their draft so far, is reducing chronic absenteeism starting in the early grades. So chronic absenteeism is defined as usually missing 10% or more of the school year for whatever reason. And we also did a report with the Campaign for Grade Level Reading on chronic absenteeism in Arkansas last fall, also on our website. It's a much bigger problem than people realize. So we hope that the ESSA plan for the state will include that as one of its school quality and student success indicators. That's something that goes beyond just your test scores. It's looking at how many students are consistently coming to school. And it's also an early warning system for identifying problems with students before they kind of snowball and students get further and further behind. We hope that they adopt policies to improve school discipline and reduce racial disparities. these kind of policies can help keep kids in the classroom, things like restorative justice, conscious discipline. Again, go to our website. We have all of these things. Another recommendation is promoting family and community engagement in a real authentic way. And what I mean by that is providing funding or incentives to, say, expand the community school model, which approaches schools with more of a holistic approach, providing health services, tying families with community resources, increasing access to books in students' homes, encouraging parents and caregivers to read and talk to their children, and then finally just adopting and reporting more meaningful measures of school quality. We know that you can't judge a school just by a standardized test alone, and it shouldn't be used as a punitive measure. It should be used as a diagnostic tool. So all of these things we think would make for a much stronger ESSA plan. It's not too late for people to get involved in providing feedback and helping shape our plan, because it's going to affect all of our kids, all of our teachers and schools for many years to come, just like the No Child Left Behind law did that was passed in 2000 and went into effect in 2001. The state must submit its final proposal to the U.S. Department of Education in September of this year. Right now, they've released the second draft of their plan, which you can find on the Arkansas Department of Education's ESSA webpage at arkansasessa.org. And there's a place where you can go and submit feedback on their online form by June 23rd. I was told today that that deadline may be extended a little bit because I believe the department was working on a Spanish translation so that people whose first language is not English will have a chance to digest all that information and provide their comments as well. So let's just say tentatively June 23rd, the sooner you can give them feedback, the better. And then after that, the state will take the plan, incorporate the feedback, send it to the governor for his approval in late July or August, and then submit that final approved plan to the U.S. Department of Education on or before September 18th. So that's the big picture, the big timeline, and some things that the Arkansas Advocates hopes that will come of this and make some really positive changes for a lot of accountability measures in Arkansas. On the federal level, U.S. Department of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos was before a Senate Appropriation Committee yesterday. Many of you may have seen the news coverage of that today. She was there to present her budget for the department in the next fiscal year, and even some of the most conservative Republicans told her that her budget was pretty much dead on arrival. As Rich has said earlier, some of the administration's budget cuts are pretty draconian, to put it mildly. DeVos's budget would cut $9.2 billion in fiscal 2018. That's down from about $68 billion, just to give you some context. So that's a pretty hefty cut. Meanwhile, school vouchers could get up to about $1 billion, $1.5 billion. So the cuts in the overall budget, just to give you an example of what that means and how it would affect things in Arkansas, that would completely eliminate the federally funded after-school and summer programs that are known as the 21st Century Community Learning Centers, which operate different programs all over Arkansas and many other states. So that's $1.2 billion right there. $190 million in literacy grants to help improve grade level reading. Federal supplemental education opportunity grants at a cost of $732 million in cuts. These grants go to help kids prepare for and make it to and through college. And we've already heard that they're not going to do much to help college students on student loans anymore. The news seems to get worse as the weeks go by. And perhaps most disturbingly, besides just the budget numbers, I think it's concerning that the person that's in charge of our Department of Education at the federal level will not affirm that she will uphold rights for students who are LGBT, who have special education needs, and she will not rein in abuses of for-profit education companies. Those include things like for-profit universities that have been sued extensively across the country for ripping students off, not providing them the kind of education that they signed up for, and then leaving them with tens of thousands of dollars in debt for worthless degrees. Meanwhile, all of these companies are raking in money hand over fist, and the DeVos administration has no intention of doing anything about it. Perhaps that's because she's involved in operating one or investing in one. So that's a challenge that's disappointing. And I think it's just important to let our audience know that our congressional delegation needs to hear from you if you are not happy with some of the things that are going on in Washington. And it's important that they hear from you when you are happy with things that the administration is doing and things that the congressional delegation is doing. So just make sure that your voice is being heard on these issues, and so that they know that you're paying attention.
Paying attention is kind of what it's all about. We've thrown a lot at you, but what we're here to talk about tonight is some of the federal policy changes that have been proposed, and try and cut through some of the noise to talk to you a little bit about what we really hope you'll be paying attention to. There are plenty of distractions. You can still give us a call with your questions at 501-433-0088, or you can email us at speakupar@gmail.com. Okay, so all three of you talk a lot about the importance of reaching out to your congressional delegation. And yet, you know, I know certainly for a lot of people are uncomfortable, for example, calling up their congressman and talking about the budget in great detail. What do they really need to hear about, you know, not just about the budget, but, you know, just since I'm looking at you, Rich, but, you know, when we ask folks to call their congressman, what do they need to really say?
Well, I think it does depend on what folks are calling about. Are they talking about health care? And
well, if you're talking specifically about all the budget cuts and, you know, just the budget generally, do you think it's better to drill down to, like, you know, not talking about the whole budget but just this one thing? Or
I mean, I think this as specific as you can be, as possible, is good. Just because of the, there's a particular program that you're interested in, whether it's whether it's SNAP or disability insurance or low income housing. I mean, because chances are, our congressional delegation, to the extent that they're going to fight to keep funding for particular programs, they're not going to fight to keep funding for everything, because part of the Republican platform, so to speak, this time around in Congress, is to scale back the scope of government. And so, so our congressional delegation, they are not going to fight President Trump on all of his budget proposals, but they might be willing to fight for parts of it that they think are real important to Arkansans. And so, I think if you can drill down, that's possible. But I think there's also nothing wrong with just calling up and just saying that the president's proposed budget hurts Arkansas in way too many ways across the board, and we want you to be much more thoughtful, much more thoughtful about what you cut. To really think about what are the impacts going to be on the day-to-day lives of Arkansans.
Right. Okay. You know, There's a lot in the budget that specifically impacts folks. If you're listening and you know, this is something that's going to directly impact you, that would be an important thing for you to let your you know, the folks who represent you know about, because they certainly have people who are on the other side who are talking to them. And so they very much need to hear from the people who are directly impacted. But I think it's important to note, as we were talking about earlier, Marquita, that that budget cuts, you know, these budget cuts particularly, whether it relates to the education cuts or the healthcare cuts, you know, or all the other cuts, are without question hitting low and middle income people hardest. But we also have to remember that that those who maybe don't fit into that category are impacted, for example, by things like research cuts and reduction in environmental protections that that, you know, affect all Arkansans, whether we're aware of them on an everyday basis or not. Ginny, you were talking a little bit about the comment period for ESSA, and the deadline to submit comments is coming up pretty quickly. What kind of feedback are they looking for?
I looked at the survey earlier today, and it's quite comprehensive. It asks people to rank different sections of the draft according to whether they strongly agree with it all the way to strongly disagree. But then there's plenty of opportunity to provide open-ended comments as well. And then there's a whole space down at the bottom where you can type to your heart's content about what you hope to see coming out of the state's ESSA plan. So I think they've done a good job of trying to reach out and engage people in this process, which is hard to do because, you know, things like a state's ESSA plan is probably not at the forefront of a lot of parents and community members' minds. We tend to get the usual suspects involved in these kind of processes, but they really do want to hear from parents, and they want to hear from people in the community about what they think kids need and what teachers need. So I encourage everyone to go and at least familiarize yourself with the website so you know where to find things. It's at arkansasessa.org, or you can just go to the State Department of Education's website. I believe is arkansased.org, I think. Google it. And you can find all the information that they've discussed, all the handouts, everything is on their website, so you can go back and see how they made these decisions. They've been very transparent with it. And we'll keep you posted as well. If you go to Arkansas Advocates website and sign up for our email updates, I'm sure Carrie can talk a little bit more about that before we close today. We will send out updates as decisions get made. If you sign up for education issues, and on our blog and on our Facebook page as well.
Great, thank you. Don't forget, you can call us with your questions, 501-433-0088. We definitely want to hear from some of you folks, especially if there are programs you're particularly concerned about that are on the chopping block. Marquita, did you want to chime in?
Sure. So, just adding a little bit more to the discussion on what folks need to do in terms of next steps. So kind of here's the latest on where we are on the health reform bill. So as we mentioned, the U.S. House of Representatives did pass the bill. So now it's up to Senate. You know, the great majority of senators, including Arkansas senators, and one important note to make actually is that Senator Tom Cotton is a part of a small group of senators who are working on crafting a proposal. So Arkansas is going to have a voice in what happens. But senators have basically promised that the current version of the bill that passed won't be the final version. So this is definitely the time to weigh in. I mean, this could happen as early as a vote in July before they take a break or go on recess, or it could happen in the fall. But now is the time to weigh in. In addition to the suggestions that Rich made around kind of what you say and how you shape your argument, the other thing I'll add you know, is that it's really important that they just know how it's, how this is impacting you. And maybe not even all bad things, right? Just talking about, especially as it relates to healthcare, here's how having access to affordable coverage has been important for me as an individual, or here's how it has been important to my family. I mean, I think that really adds up, you know, that personal perspective, because it's really easy to make policy decisions from sort of 100 feet away. But when you really hear those examples of constituents who will be impacted and how it will affect their day-to-day lives, I think that's pretty even impactful versus my talking numbers and throwing out data and research. I mean, giving this stuff a real face, these are real lives that'll be impacted. Carrie, you made another important point. It's not just low-income families. So I talked a lot about Medicaid and low-income families. You talked a lot about SNAP programs. But this is, I mean, this is across the board, hardworking, kind of middle-class families that'll be impacted by a lot of these proposed changes, specifically as it relates to healthcare. You know, we're talking about some families who actually already have gone out and found their own coverage plan, and they're getting certain tax credits or benefits to help reduce the cost. That could all change. So these changes that we're talking about won't just affect those individual groups of people, but we're talking about really kind of destabilizing the entire economy in our state.
Well, and people do not seem particularly happy about that. You know, we saw the, you know, sort of the power of that collective action back when, you know, when you were hearing about all the town halls and
absolutely
people making calls about this first iteration of the AHCA. People's voices are definitely an important part of this process, and so that's what we want to encourage you all to do. We'll be glad to take a question at 501-433-0088. We talked a little bit about how you can get plugged in to some of the resources that we've got at Arkansas Advocates. And you, Jenny mentioned our website, aradvocates.org. When you go there, you can click on the Take Action button and sign up for legislative alerts. You can sign up for our newsletters. You can identify which issue you're most interested in and receive notices about that issue. And we'll let you know when important things come up for a vote or when things are being considered that you most need to know about. The other really important thing that I want everyone listening to know is who represents you in Congress. If you do not know the answer to that question, that's totally fine, because we've got a handy tool on the Arkansas Advocates website as well. Basically, you can go to Arkansas Advocates website for literally anything. We have everything that you would ever need to know. But if you want to find out, thank you. But if you want to find out who is representing you, we've got a little tool right there on the website so that you know who to call. It will give you all the contact information, and you'll have everything you need. And then, of course, if you need further assistance, you can give us a call at Advocates as well. So those things are really, really important. Any parting shots from any of you?
I need to correct myself. Uh-oh. I think I gave the wrong website address for the Department of Education. It's okay. ArkansasEd.gov. ArkansasEd.gov. I just went there right now, and the place to give your feedback on the ESSA plan is the first thing on the page.
Good deal. Defined.
Okay, thank you for that. If we haven't gotten nerdy enough, I've got one more question, and anybody here can take it, but a couple of you have made reference to budget proposals that are being made, that are being, you know, that some are saying are dead on arrival. What does that mean procedurally? Like, what happens from that point? If Congress receives the Trump budget, for example, and says nope, not happening, what then happens?
Well, I mean, they will undoubtedly hold hearings. There's a budget committee. There's also an appropriations committee, and so there likely will be lots of committee hearings and subcommittee hearings over the next few months. So that's going to happen. But again, I do want to stress that folks are going to be using the president's budget as really a starting point for negotiations. And so, I think if we give folks the impression that it's going to be dead on arrival, that uh, that would be a mistake, because I think the negotiations aren't going to be about are likely not to be about increasing the budget. Quite frankly, if we could hold on to what we have, that would be a major accomplishment. And so, proposals in Congress are likely going to center around, how much of the president's budget cut are we going to keep? And again, even keeping part of his budget cut, could be devastating for Arkansas families. So let's not be lulled into a false sense of security that as some folks in Congress say that it's dead on arrival. Well, it's really not.
That's an important point. We see so much coming across, across the news and across our social media feeds, and people are sharing things right and left, and it's doom and gloom. And don't get me wrong, it's not good. What's going on? But I think it's very, very important for people to keep in mind that it may seem overwhelming, and there's a whole lot of news coming at us, and it seems big and sort of unreachable. But in fact, these people are elected to represent us, and so it's very, very important that we, that we weigh in. Again, particularly if you, for example, hear something about the healthcare plan and think, well, I've got a pre-existing condition, or my, a family member has a pre-existing condition, and hey, that's going to impact me, and I have to talk to my senator or my representative about that. I think it's very, very important to make the point that you just made, that just because people are saying that it's unlikely to happen, that may or may not be the case.
And I hear a lot from folks who have worries across the board. And so I've heard from parents who are concerned about their child who has a disability losing their Medicaid coverage. And that same parent has questions about, well, what's going to happen to my special education services or rights in the school setting? It's a lot of, impact broadly across these families. And so I think that's why it's, really important, definitely, for them to weigh in and share the personal impact with lawmakers.
Gotcha. It is said that the personal is political, and that's never been more true. Policies are made every day by our elected officials that impact you in your everyday lives. Oh, so I thought you were trying to get my attention.
I was giving you the signal.
The signal. It's better than some signals that I'll take it. That was very polite. I think maybe that's a sign from above that we should, that we should close it out. So with that, I want to thank you all for listening. Thanks to Rich and Marquita and Ginny for being here. Thanks to Paul for holding my hand throughout all this. And we welcome your comments. So you can email your comments to speakupar@gmail.com. Certainly, we welcome you again to visit the Arkansas Advocates website at aradvocates.org. Also, if you're not already following us on Facebook or Twitter, that's a great way to keep in touch. And be sure to listen in next week. We're going to be talking a little bit about workforce development, what's being done to train and retrain our Arkansas workforce. So with that, thanks so much for listening, and have a great evening.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thanks.
Thanks, Carrie.